Welcome to the latest live edition of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. I'm no longer in an undisclosed location. I'm back in my dining room where Matt has previously podcasted as well. But Notre Dame wrapped up their Thursday training camp practice day. It's a last look that anybody in the media will get at the team actually doing football until the season opens in College Station on the 31st. So, Matt, I'm sure we'll get a lot of questions about this throughout this live show, but it's hard in it. And again, I'd like to not make too much of stuff, but when you see a true freshman working at left tackle and Notre Dame's going to College Station to play an SEC pass rush in the, not the air quotes SEC pass rush, like the legit SEC type of pass rush, it gives you a little bit of like, okay, this might be a developing situation for Notre Dame as they try to open the season on the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw your text first, and I saw your tweet from practice post-practice today. And yeah, I'm like, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Normally, I mean, generally speaking, no. Well, I mean, is Anthony Knapp that good or is Tosh Baker struggling that much? And you know, obviously good on Knapp for taking advantage of whatever the situation may be there. But yes, negative that it's a freshman probably going up against Texas A&M. But like, he had to have done something during this spot, right? It can't just be like, we don't trust Baker, we're just going to throw a freshman in there, right?
You would think so. And I know that, you know, talking to people inside the program, they like Knapp quite a bit. But that's different than saying we like Knapp quite a bit going to College Station. And I think that the sort of commentary on potentially starting a true freshman there, people say, hey, it worked out for Joe Alt. Kind of. I mean, that offensive line was not great that year. You could say it worked out for Ryan Harris, friend of the show, or Sam Young in 2006. Sort of. I think for Notre Dame to get where it wants to go this year, a replay of those seasons probably may not be enough. You know, 2021 could be an exception considering they ended up, you know, almost making the 14 playoff that year. Certainly would have made a 12 teamer, but it is something to monitor moving forward, and we will get some clarity maybe on Saturday when Marcus Freeman, Mike Denbrock, and Al Golden all come in for interviews. They have a big scrimmage on Saturday that sort of is the official wrap up of training camp before they get into prep seriously for Texas A&M. But it's that and just sort of the offensive line in general. We saw, you know, Ashton Craig still at center, but Sam Pendleton working at guard in place of Rocco Spindler and Pat Coogan, who Pat Coogan was working with the second team offensive line at center. I see that much more as like they need Coogan to be ready to play center just in case. Howard Cross is somebody that, you know, there was some hot buzz about last weekend. His injury status, Notre Dame has said, no, it's load management. He's fine. He did work in sort of like field goal block or extra point block today. So he's out there taking reps. But the offensive line was the biggest question going into the season. And it's that question has only got more pronounced over the course of 2 weeks, especially when, you know, I don't like to read too much into coaches' quotes, but when Joe Rudolph gives this, like, it's Tosh Baker, he's our guy, like, no problem, total faith, and less than a week later, it's potentially Anthony Knapp. It just gives you pause about, like, okay, where is this position group right now?
Yeah, I just think if you're in that situation as offensive line coach, as a head coach, you have to be looking long-term beyond just the A&M game if you're going to put Knapp in there, right? I mean, clearly this guy as a freshman has a higher long-term upside than what they've already seen out of the last 4 years from Tosh Baker. It's can he get anywhere close to that potential within this season? And if that's the case, that's got to be your option. Again, not an ideal situation to have a true freshman starting left tackle. And again, as promising as Charles Jagasaw was, let's remember, he was only a redshirt freshman with one career start under his belt coming into this year. So that was a big question mark with the absence of Joe Alt to begin with. You mentioned 21. I mean, you look back on that season and, yes, what they finished 5, I think, in the regular season. I mean, they were the last team out, I believe, of the college football playoff. I don't think there was any point in that season where we looked and thought, man, this is a college football playoff caliber team, or this is one of the best teams in the country. It was one of those, I remember vividly, because this Brian Kelly was gone a day later, we're recapping that Stanford game. They go 11-1. We're playing out the scenarios of championship weekend and could Notre Dame get in? And it was kind of like, holy cow, this team's really come far. You know, from where they were at the beginning of the year, the way they struggle with Purdue, the way they struggle with a just okay Florida State team, I think, at the beginning of that season, to where they ended up 11-1 with their only loss coming to a playoff team in Cincinnati, that team grew a lot. And I say all that to say, we could still be having that exact same conversation about this team, probably should still be having that exact same conversation about this team. Worst case scenario, if everything goes to hell on the offensive line, because it's 12-team playoff. I mean,
yeah,
good offensive line, bad offensive line, this should still be one of the 12 best teams in the country by far. And I think the schedule, much like the schedule in 21, they played one really good team and they lost to that really good team. They should still be 10-2, 11-1, 12-0 with this schedule based on the talent they have on hand. Again, regardless of whether the left tackle situation is ideal or not. I think we saw the coaches poll come out last week. The AP poll came out this week. Top seven unchanged. Notre Dame is number seven. Notre Dame's three opponents all in the same spots, coaches and AP poll. FSU 10, A&M 20, USC 23, Louisville 26 technically in the AP poll, most receiving votes. All the talk I've heard, radio, podcasts, TV, is are people just overrating Notre Dame because of their schedule? I don't think that's all of it. I think, again, defensively, this should be good, as good as any team in the country. I think offensively, they still got a lot of desirable pieces there, offensive line notwithstanding. But I do think that's a real factor here when you look at the long-term projections of this program this season. Is it was always kind of get through A&M game because you're going to have a clearer vision of the rest of the season depending on how you play on that game. I think that's just been crystallized even more so given how hamstrung the offensive line appears to be at this time. But again, it doesn't really change my expectations for where this program should be at the end of the USC game in November.
No, it's, I mean, it's just, I think Cincinnati would be maybe the hardest game. That version of Cincinnati would be the hardest opponent Notre Dame would face this season. And even then, it's like they were there, even with a bad offensive line, they had that game there to win. You fumble a kickoff return, Cincinnati recovers. You throw a pick in the end zone to Sauce Gardner. Like,
they played how many quarterbacks that game, Notre Dame?
Yeah, I think they played all three quarterbacks in that game too. So it, I don't think, and this will sound strange to say, but I really don't think these questions about the offensive line change my opinion about the regular season at all. A&M is still a difficult place to play, whether it's Jagasaw or Baker or Knapp. The next 10 games you should win, maybe comfortably. And then USC, I think it's just kind of hard to feel confident that USC will be good, bad, and different this far in advance. But I think where it changes things is like, are you going to have an honest shot in the college football playoff when your offensive line is a work in progress? And like, maybe Joe Rudolph will have like one of the most improved units in season. That can happen too. Like, I think we forget that players improve during the course of a season sometimes, or groups improve during the course of a season. It just, the questions are a lot more pronounced. And like, as someone in our comment section noted, like, Notre Dame almost lost Toledo in 2021 with that offensive line. Like, they couldn't project Jack Cohn against a MAC school. That, you know, it feels like they could have that kind of, maybe they beat A&M and then have a game like that a week later against Northern Illinois. Maybe it's the fight in Chuck Martin's that it's the fourth quarter and Notre Dame's up by seven. And you're like, this shouldn't be happening. I could see Notre Dame having a game like that just because their offensive line is like maybe won't let them sort of just take off and run away from people, which I think with Leonard, the receivers, running backs, Mitchell Evans, they have the capability to run away from people. But if your offensive line is a work in progress, that makes it very, very difficult.
When did Blake Fisher get hurt?
His freshman year, he got hurt at the end of the first half against Florida State.
Right.
Missed the entire season, came back in the Fiesta Bowl, and was outstanding in pass pro when I think Jack Cohn threw it 50, 60 times. I can't remember.
I just bring that up because a similar situation, and we forget, like, they had a true freshman on that roster who they were very, very high on going into that first game, and they lost him. And again, the parallels between 21 and 24, I think, are very similar when you look at where this team stands on the offensive line going into camp. I'm glad Coldus Bryant reminded us they almost lost to Toledo. I mean, it was rough, that Virginia Tech game, right? I mean, they had no business winning that game.
Yes.
There was a quarterback controversy going into that one. They came back. It was a very disjointed season that only got more disjointed with the way things unfolded program-wise after that Stanford game. But I do think if they were to go with Knapp, I can't help but think it goes back to what you said, Pete, which is, yeah, we think we can make the playoff either way. It's not about just getting a bite at the apple. It's about progressing through that tournament once we get in. And we're more confident in where Knapp could be game 12, game 13, game 14, et cetera, than the ceiling we already know we have with Tosh Baker.
Yeah, which I don't think is frankly that high. There's nothing over the course of Tosh Baker's career. He's been a valuable part of the offensive line, but not somebody that I think you put out there and feel great about. You mentioned sort of the polls coming out. Notre Dame was 7 in both. And how long do you think it will take for us to, like, reflectively know that if you're 7th in the polls, that means you're actually 9th in college football playoff seeding? Because that's where being 7 would get you. I think in both instances, Notre Dame would open on the road at Ole Miss and then face Georgia in the second round. That's sort of where, like, you need your offensive line to be in great shape to win one game, never mind two. And, you know, beyond that, who knows? But that's sort of where the A&M game, it's that if you want a chance to do something in the playoff, you almost sort of have to win this game. Because I don't think that being the 9 seed opening on the road and then facing the number one team in the country in the quarterfinals is a path to success. Whereas, you know, being the 5 or the 6 seed opening at home and then facing the ACC or Big 12 champion in the quarterfinals, that is. So that's another part of, like, why this season is so fascinating for Notre Dame. It's like, it's not just making it to the playoff. It's doing damage in the playoff. But if you come in as the 8 or the 9 seed, are you going to have a chance to do that damage at all because of the path to making it? I don't know. But I think it's another part of why this season is going to be so fascinating for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if you said at Georgia in the second round or quarterfinals, that would be a game, but either way, very difficult task. But I do think that's where seeding gets really, really important. I think you and Ralph Russo and a couple others are having an animated Twitter discussion about this earlier this week. And, you know, what's the trade-off, right? If you're Notre Dame not resting, but, you know, having that championship week off the way you normally do, I think is a trade-off you get in order to, you know, be a part of this playoff and have as high as a 5 seed if you are, the 5th best team in the country come the end of the season. I'm curious. I don't know if is the committee going to, like, seed these things and rank these teams differently? Like, when they have their weekly shows, is it going to, like, Utah is the highest ranked Big 12 team and they're not even in the top 10. Like, will they be a top 4 team no matter what every time they rank them if they're in first place in the Big 12? I don't know if they're going to give their rankings on best teams and then seed them accordingly week to week.
That's a good question. I mean, maybe the playoff committee will come up with their rankings and then ESPN's Dog and Pony Show will then turn it into a bracket. I'm assuming that's kind of what it will be.
I mean, the selection chair is Ward Manuel, who has absolutely nothing else going on in his hands, controversial wise, in Michigan. So I'm sure we'll get total clarity and transparency.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah. Some other things from practice. I know there's a question about Howard Cross among the comments. Yes, he was at practice today. Didn't see him take, like, a ton of reps, but he's not on the bike. It's not like he's in a walking boot. If you didn't know any better, you would assume that he's just completely fine. So that was a positive development. Another development for practice today, it was receivers and defensive backs days in terms of who's coming in. Jaden Mickey confirmed that Christian Gray is the starting cornerback opposite Benjamin Morrison. That I think is something we've seen all camp, including today when they went into, sort of tempo drills in the beginning of practice. You got to see a little bit more of a depth chart. I continue to be impressed just by the volume of receivers that they can run through drills. When you think about last year when they go to Duke with essentially three scholarship receivers who were available, and then you watch practice today and they have 11 scholarship receivers who can go through drills. And Cam Williams, who was a fringe five-star prospect, is the 11th guy in just sort of the pecking order right now. Like that is a real boost for like Riley Leonard and Mike Denbrock. I talked to Jaden Greathouse, Mike Brown, the receivers coach, came in as well. Mike Brown talked about how, look, we can have 11 guys, but on a game day, you've got six ready to go. So I would think the six, Chris Mitchell, Bo Collins, Jaden Harrison, Jordan Faison, Jaden Thomas, Jaden Greathouse, like those are probably your six, with Micah Gilbert being the seventh. But it's a talented group. I would be surprised if Notre Dame's passing game didn't look as good as it looked in, I don't want to say maybe 2015, but like it's been a minute since I would say Notre Dame's passing game in terms of its depth would be a matchup problem. And Jaden Greathouse, I talked to him about sort of what's different with Denbrock. He said like the pace of the offense, the motions, you can actually catch a defense off guard. Whereas last year it was kind of more a little slower, maybe a little bit more deliberate. And if you're catching Notre Dame's defense off guard in practice, even once or twice, like that's a pretty good sign you're going to be able to catch a lot of people off guard when it comes to actual game time.
It's officially summer, which means it's time to get into Roback with 20% off for our listeners at The Independent. It's our go-to apparel on the course, at the lake, around the diamond, or even recording a pod. With polos, hoodies, shorts, and quarter zips, Roback has what you need to get active and stay active all summer long. And with football around the corner, gear up for those tailgates and watching the Irish in person this fall. You've probably seen Shamrock polos around campus already. Get yours. Listeners of The Independent can get 20% off your first purchase by using the promo code IRISH. Again, that's 20% off all hoodies, polos, quarter zips, and more at Roback on your first order with the promo code IRISH.
A lot of this is geared toward predictions and what all this means for the season. I've done a lot of research this week. The sportsbooks now, we don't have a sponsor, so I'm going to announce all of them, and we are open for business if you're listening. But I have a number of fun props from a number of different sports books that are Notre Dame related, some of which I absolutely love. And maybe we'll move some lines here, Pete, depending on how heavy rollers our listeners are. But I got to start off with this one. And at least at this price, it's too good to ignore. DraftKings right now, Notre Dame over 5.5, 4 wins, plus 140. Basically undefeated at home, which they're going to be favored in every game except for maybe Florida State, depending on where they are at the end of the year. And I'm still going to bet on Notre Dame to win that game because DJU right now is 0-2 at Notre Dame, and he's had a better squad with those Clemson teams than he's had with this Florida State team.
I guess you can't bet over for everything, but to me, that's the one where I
plus 140.
If it was minus 110, like a toss up, I probably would still bet the over.
I would still say over.
The fact you're getting juice on it, DJU at Notre Dame, I feel like it's like if you can get through Louisville, and I don't know why you wouldn't at this point, other than maybe the offensive line and Ashton Jolote is really good, Louisville star defensive end. You can get through that one. I don't know like how Florida State's coming to South Bend in November and winning. So yeah, I would bet the over on that one. I like Notre Dame a lot to run the table at home this year.
They've not done it in 4 years. 2020 was the last time. They've lost at least one home game, 3 straight years. This does not include the Army game, which is a home game. It's only games at Notre Dame Stadium. So they have 6, over 5.5, at plus 140.
You can throw that one in if you want.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you what's the juice if I say they win 7?
Yeah.
Over 5.5.
Plus 141.
Another one. All right. This is the way I would play this. With a hat tip to our friend Tim Murray, who tipped me off of this one. Their win total right now on BetMGM is 10.5 at plus 145. You could bet them on DraftKings to win exactly 10 games at plus 300. So I would do both of those with, say, twice as much money on the over 10.5 as I would on the exactly 10. Basically, if they win 9 games, you're screwed. And if they win 9 games, I think they're screwed because there's no way they should lose 3 games of the schedule. You basically guarantee a profit if they win at least 10 games here.
Yeah, I would probably hit both of those. What did you say you were going to go more straight on the number or more on the?
I would do both together. I would do over 10.5 at plus 145 with exactly 10 at plus 300.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's. I would hit both of those. It's a great over under line.
Unless Riley Leonard gets hurt and everything goes to hell.
Last year, you could find 8.5.
But I'm saying you could pick 3 losses easily on that.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, but you couldn't find 4. That was like last year's sort of preseason number. Like, you could get Notre Dame if they won 9, you won, which was like, I felt like it was free money. I realized that they sort of got pretty close to the sun at Duke with it. But that, to me, this feels like I would put money on 10. I would put money on over 10.5 as well.
Yeah, I mean, you lock in a profit there as long as they don't lose 3. And again, they can't lose 3. There are some really fun ones, and you might want to break out your schedules for this one. Also on DraftKings, you do 2 teams who wins more games. Notre Dame versus LSU. However, the juice on Notre Dame is minus 245, and on LSU is plus 200. So there's very little upside to betting Notre Dame here.
Yeah, I think that's probably a bet with your heart, not your head, for most of our listeners, that they would have to take Notre Dame on that one. I think it's unpalatable to take LSU, which I feel like, I don't know. I think LSU should be good, right?
They should be really good. They're not worse on defense. I think Nussmeier's good. He's obviously not Jaden Daniels. We'll see how much he missed Dembrock. They should be good, but that schedule's really, really tough in the new SEC. I think they close with – they play Oklahoma late in the season. I think either right before or right after Bama. Like, it's a tough schedule. And look, they could lose week 1 to LSU, to USC too, for all we know. And that would things up a lot. Beefeater, NDO8, jinx it, whatever. I'm being an optimist. I'll put my wallet where my mouth is with at least some of these. The home wins one, they better get. The other one, Notre Dame versus Penn State, ND minus 105, Penn State minus 115. I think Notre Dame's a better team than Penn State. Penn State might have an easier schedule than Notre Dame this year. Although if they were to trip up week 1 at West Virginia, then all hell could break loose. But Penn State basically hosts Ohio State, and they'll be favored in every other game as well. I'm surprised there's more juice on the Penn State side of this because I don't think they're as good of a team as Notre Dame is. And I have a lot of questions about Penn State's offense after last year. But I would still lean Notre Dame on this one, even if I could see both going 11-1 very easily.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical of Penn State. Just like, I haven't seen it. Like, I feel more confident in Riley Leonard than Drew Aller. And I realize Drew Aller was like a big time prospect, but like the way last season ended, I'm kind of out on that one. So I would sell Penn State.
I'm with you. I think Andy Kotelnicki could be a difference maker there, but you look at, and again, this is one of the easier Big Ten schedules, but they have a 4-game stretch where it's at USC, at Wisconsin, Ohio State, Washington. All I got to do, in my opinion, is lose 2 of those or Ohio State in any other game, and they're not going to win this bet. Because again, Notre Dame's not going less than 10-2 this year. You heard it here.
Yeah.
Great news, folks. That's what's going to happen. Real fun one, and our NFL listeners can help with this one. On Caesars, Notre Dame versus the Dallas Cowboys. Notre Dame's giving half a game here because they play fewer games. Minus 120 on Notre Dame. Minus 110 on Dallas at plus 0.5. Does this include college football playoff games? I don't know. Most of these don't. But if you're going to compare them with an NFL team, I almost think that it should.
Yeah, it's a new world of betting. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I would probably go Notre Dame there, although I'm not a NFL expert by any stretch of the imagination.
The Cowboys are always good in the regular season. They just, I feel like, they're always a playoff team at the very least. Yeah. They just can't figure it out come the playoffs. There are, believe it or not, we're not done yet, folks. There are Davey O'Brien Award props, Doak Walker Award props, and multiple Blutnikoff Award props. Oh, and Riley Leonard. Wow. On FanDuel right now, over under passing yards, 2,525 yards. Juice is minus 114 on both sides.
I would go over on that one. Yeah, and that's like, I'm so interested like to see like total touchdowns for Riley Leonard this year. I want to know what the line is for that. Perhaps you or Tim Murray can research that before our next show.
I didn't see any.
Because it's like you go back to Ian Book, I think he was at 38 or 39 in 2019, where he was, you know, went over 30 touchdown passes and I think under 10 for rushing. But I feel like Leonard's got to, you know, for Notre Dame to be as good as I think that they're going to be, I do think Leonard's got to be over 35 touchdowns, right? Like,
totally, yeah.
It could be more like a 23 and 13 passing to rushing, which is a little bit more like his sophomore year at Duke. But, you know, if he does that, then I think Notre Dame's in great shape because it means they had an efficient offense that was also explosive when it needed to be at the same time.
He's at plus 2,200 on Bet Rivers to win the Davey O'Brien Award. I'd like to know who votes on these awards before I like bet on them, even if that's
right.
I assume Jaden Daniels is the reigning winner. I don't know that. He's the reigning Heisman winner, and he was a quarterback, so it wouldn't make sense. Ones that if you really want to get – here's one where, like, you could talk me into it as a long shot. Jeremiah Love on FanDuel to win the Doak Walker Award plus 9,500.
Oh, God, yeah.
Could happen.
I would put more than a token bet on that one, actually. That's,
even with this offensive line. Huh?
Look, it's not just because it happened in my EA Sports 2025 Dynasty where he did win the Doak Walker or the best running back award.
There we go.
I don't think they have the Doak Walker licensing. But, yeah, that's one where I could see him, you know, having a 13, 1,400-yard season, a few hundred yards rushing or receiving, like, even with this offensive line, like, and I'm not saying like he's going to be like, we're going to get into like 33 trucking territory here with Jeremiah Love. Like, he's not going to have that level of workload, but I just think he's going to have some huge
trucking, Love's gas station. You're building the highest campaign for them already.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to get with Notre Dame on that one. See if we can maybe have some kind of licensing agreement. But yeah, I like Jeremiah Love a lot. I think he's just like a home run at all times. And you just need a few of them to really click. I don't think you need to be like Ollie Gordon where you're getting 210 carries. I think for Jeremiah Love to put up huge numbers this year.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we recorded later in the season last year, and Audric Estime was the betting favorite at one point to win the award, and I don't even think he was a semifinalist. And Ollie Gordon, who ended up winning it, was kind of an unknown until halfway through the year. So
yeah.
Plus 9,500, why not? Blitnikoff Award. On FanDuel, the only Notre Dame receiver they list is Chris Mitchell at plus 10,000. On Bet Rivers, the only Notre Dame receiver they list is Bo Collins at plus 8,000.
Yeah, that's lighting money on fire. I just think like Notre Dame is going to spread their ball around too much. I think Jaden Greathouse will lead the team in receptions anyway. So, you know, Collins and Mitchell, neither of the above for that one. I think Greathouse, if you could find a very deep in the weeds prop bet for receptions, I would be hard pressed not to take the over on whatever number they put on it, because it's going to be pretty reasonable. I'd be hard pressed not to take the over on something like that.
Coldest Brian, you said, I'm surprised 33 trucking was allowed. I literally bought the hat. I didn't know they were for sale. They gave them out to the media and then.
Not me.
Fully cop. No. So I'll fully cop. It was like year one or year two at the Athletic. And we did a Chicago subscriber meetup when those were like a thing. And we had prizes and stuff. And I donated my hat, which was unworn, by the way. So someone won it. It's somewhere. If I see you around Lakeview, I'll give you a head nod. I did not know those were available for purchase, though. They were pretty good hats, and I still have a great picture of a stone-faced Quentin Nelson wearing one after, I think, the NC State game. And just, like, peak Quentin Nelson, like, I'm not smiling. I'm not giving any emotion whatsoever, but I am supporting my teammate with this trucking hat picture. I'll have to find that. You did bring up something I wanted to talk about, EA Sports NCAA Football 25. So I had a very eventful week here. Tuesday night, my wife and I went to the Green Day and Smashing Pumpkins show at Wrigley. It was like Nirvana for all of us 30 and 40 something year old white guys who grew up on these bands. Last night we went to, took my 5-year-old to the Yankees White Sox game. Of course we left in the seventh inning and did not see Aaron Judge's 300th home run. But we stopped at a friend's beforehand in Bridgeport, and the plan was for me to get there early and play the game because he has a game. I still have not played the game. I view it as a gateway drug. I don't have a console, as I haven't since I've entered adulthood, and my kids are not grown up yet. But I do know if I bought it, I would play it all day, and that would be bad news. But I did get to ask Marcus Freeman about this, and I found the interview from a couple weeks ago. I wanted to lead into it with something I found. Let me see if I can pull it up here. I don't know if we're an independent project here. I don't know if we can do screen sharing. I do have an article here from the Dayton Daily News in 2007. The headline is OSU's Freeman is thinking football virtual and real. Wayne grads a starter and possible captain if you can put down the video game. And there are some great quotes in here from a senior year Marcus, or play junior year Marcus Freeman at Ohio State. Quote, the thing about NCAA is that it consumes your life for about 3 or 4 months. People will play that every night. You'll be in practice, and all you're thinking about is, when can I get home and play that game? I said, this year, I'm not going to be that guy. I did it last year, but I'm going to concentrate on football this year, end quote. And then there's a whole paragraph about how it's because resolve eroded, and he said, quote, I played a couple times and fell into a trap. I went out and bought it. We'll see how much I end up playing it, end quote. So I asked him about this because I had to. I said, Marcus, what? I read those quotes back to him, and I said, what kind of credibility do you have with your players if you're telling them not to play this video game so much? And he said, and I quote, oh my God, man, absolutely zero, but my kids play it. And the other day I kind of said, all right, let's get the controller. It ain't that hard to play. And I think my 11-year-old embarrassed me. And I'm like, all right, I'm good. Like, this isn't real football, you know? And I had an excuse for not winning, but it was really, really cool, Matt. It's cool to watch. The graphics are so much better now, but again, it's great. I love it when I was in college playing football, so it's cool to see it back, end quote. I told him why I avoided it, because it's a gateway drug. He said, quote, I can see how, like, my kids play it every night. And I walked in there and I only played it one night and I got beat. And that was the best thing for me. I was like, I got beat. This is stupid. I don't want to play this game anymore. End quote. He said his kids fight over Notre Dame and they have a rule in their house where if you can't agree that one kid can be Notre Dame, you do 3 randoms. And then okay. I think he said it was a suey, where if you don't like your 3 randoms, you do it a suey, which is you got to pick the next random that you land on. He played his Notre Dame, obviously. So that's where Naturally. We stand. That's where Marcus Freeman.
But got his butt kicked as Notre Dame. So that's, I don't know, that's alarming.
That's a good thing. The same way he says he's not a good golfer because he's too busy recruiting. He's not a good video game player because he's too busy recruiting and coaching.
Both. Yeah. Healthy perspective on both. I don't know if we have any questions that come to mind yet. The revenge tour.
I knew this would open the floodgates, right, of NCAA comments.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cold as Brian. I've spent a couple hours going through all the uniforms. Memphis has 20 helmets in the game. I've only played as Notre Dame, and then I played one game as Navy because my 11-year-old wanted to play as Georgia. I thought I'd give him a chance, and then – but. Somehow Navy won at Sanford Stadium on a last second field goal. However, he's figured out the double reverse pass with Arizona and McMillan. And it took me a while to figure that out. So eventually I did fall to my 11-year-old, but did not get my ass kicked like Notre Dame's head coach. So it's better.
Okay. I'm not judging you for it. Mark Kupiak, yeah, how did Joe Rudolph, in a matter of 2 years, manage to disrupt Notre Dame's strongest position group and make a liability? I don't know if I agree with that. It could be a liability this year. Yeah, I don't know. If I have one legitimate criticism of Joe Rudolph and this offensive line in his time there, it's that Louisville game where it felt like they were just playing darts and mixing and matching in the middle of a game while playing from behind. I've never seen that happen in a big game. It didn't make sense to me at the time. It doesn't make sense to me in retrospect, but I don't think he's done a poor job overall.
Yeah, I mean, poor job would be too strong. If you're in a position to start a true freshman at left tackle to open a season, like, that's not a great compliment to the position either. But look, there's a reason Notre Dame
was all taken off the way he did and being right. three top five pick. Then his successor gets hurt. Like, it's a pretty extenuating set of circumstances.
Yeah, and I think in some ways his successor also declared for the draft and now plays for the Texans. Like, you, in an ideal world, you would lose two three and out offensive tackles. One is hard to deal with. Two is debilitating. You know, but it's like, as a former Notre Dame coach texted me, we had a terrible offensive line in 2020 and this team will figure it out. Like, I don't think there's a whole lot of patience for, hey, you know, the line should move the goalposts on the season. This is a huge challenge for Joe Rudolph to get that position where it needs to be, not just in week one, but by week five and week 10 and week 12 and December 20th. Because however good they are or how poorly they play at A&M, they're still going to have to be way better by the end of the season. And it's like I said at the top of the show, like, this is a position that's going to have to improve during the course of the year. It's how you do that at that, you know, I think good offensive lines always need a little bit of time to sort of get into gear. But man, this one might need a lot. And it's, if you give away a loss early, how do you make sure that the line doesn't bite you like A&M and Louisville? Because at that point, you're in big trouble in terms of the outlook of the overall season.
So I think because he was a known commodity, we forget Harry Hiestand was only back for 1 year, and it's not like Notre Dame put the world on fire in 2022, as we all know. And I think if you predate that and you look back at particularly the 2021 line and all the criticism we're still lobbying its way, who was the least popular coach on Notre Dame staff, at least in the public's mind? Jeff Quinn.
It's Jeff Quinn, yeah.
So I don't look at this as like a Joe Rudolph problem. Again, they've had good players there. They've recruited good players there. I think they have good players on this roster who will play meaningful football this year. The only like pointed criticism I would have for this regime on the line would be that Louisville game last year and the strategy or lack thereof in the middle of it. But I don't look at this as a Joe Rudolph problem.
No, I don't either. I don't either. I think he's... I think it was a very good hire at the time. I still feel that way.
Look at Wisconsin. No, he wasn't like the chief O-line coach still.
If they give up six sacks at A&M, I'm not going to be like, oh, Joe Rudolph's terrible. I still think he's a good offensive line coach. He's just got a big problem to solve right now. And it's one that, look, there's a reason Notre Dame looked for a tackle in the portal this winter. This is why, in case you get to this, but it's, you know, with Jagasaw being hurt, Baker getting a shot, maybe now we're on to Knapp. You know, essentially you're going to be starting your fourth option at tackle in game one to go with Emil Wagner, who has not played really at all either. So it's a big ask for these guys. But, you know, this is, you come to Notre Dame to solve these kind of problems, but there's no doubt that's a big problem to solve.
Well, this is where, especially if we're talking playoff here, you'll see just how good some of these teams have recruited, right, at certain positions. I mean, how many playoff teams would dip into their fourth option, so to speak, at left tackle and feel like not god-awful going into the season?
Yeah.
I just think the long game, the depth, the attrition, having everyone ready, it's going to take on a whole new meaning once we get into that 15, 16 game season for the elite of the elite teams. I want to get this one in there because you saw the viewing portions of practice today. Knapp thing is less notable given the Pendleton part. This is from Ryan. I mean, I saw some tweets going around too. It sounded like it was more situational though, right? This isn't like,
right,
Ugin, it's and Chandler are not going to start at left guard.
Yeah. If you're listening or watching the show, like, in were not totally in the weeds with practice reports. When they came out in the tempo drill to start a practice, Sam Pendleton was at left guard. And, you know, Ashton Craig was still at center. The left Pendleton at left guard is interesting, but probably not for the reason that you would think, like, ooh, is he a first team player? Because they're repping Pat Coogan at center on the second team. To me, and this is my interpretation, again, we'll ask Marcus Freeman about it on Saturday, but my interpretation is they don't have a backup center. So they're repping Pat Coogan there to make sure that they have one ready to go in case they need it. Where that's interesting, though, is like if you were trying to get Pat Coogan second team center work, obviously you can't run with the first team. One would assume that then Rocco Spindler would get those reps at left guard. And that's not what happened. He was still with the second team. So I think it tells you probably more about how they see Spindler at the moment than it does about anything with Pendleton, and they feel like Coogan is versatile. So that's why I don't like getting too carried away with like who's running where in practice, because it's just we don't know if this is a day where they're just trying to develop depth or something like that. But my takeaway is that they need Coogan to be ready to go as the second team center. But I think something you could take away from that is like Rocco Spindler is not in the running for the first team guard. That would be my assumption, you know, sitting here on August 15th as we record this.
So in the short version of that would almost be like, all right, they settled their biggest position battle at camp and now they have a new one at left tackle because.
Correct.
There isn't what he was advertised as or what they thought he would be a week ago when Jagasaw went down. You mentioned Marcus Freeman, Mike Denbrock, Al Golden speaking Saturday after practice. It's just me, or does that feel like we're going to name Riley Leonard our starting quarterback and here are our captains for the season press conference?
I think naming Riley Leonard your starting quarterback is like naming Jack Kaiser your starting inside linebacker.
But we're seeing it. Like Will Howard today at Ohio State got named, and Tyler Van Dyke. It was kind of like you do got to name it.
I suppose. But in the past, like Notre Dame naming a starting quarterback would be a story. This year, it's a tweet.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean? I think they'll go with. Eventually, they will say Riley Leonard is a starting quarterback because that's what everyone said all camp. Captains. I think captains will be a question Freeman gets asked, and then he says, we're going to take care of that this week, and then they'll probably announce it a week from Monday when it's, you know, the Monday presser of game week of Texas A&M. I don't know, like, do you have a – who are your captains for this team? I don't know if we talked about it on this podcast.
We did after the first practice when we forgot about Mitchell Evans when we were naming guys on offense. I mean, Evans, Kaiser, I think Morrison will be one. I think Ross will probably be one. Cross, again, it's a lot easier to pick out names on the defensive side than the offensive side. I think Leonard probably will be, but I don't think it's a lock.
I think Leonard will be too.
Disaster if he's not. Like, I don't – there's a question here for crying belly. On a scale of one to Sam Hartman, how much is media overrating Riley Leonard? Definitely not the Sam Hartman scale. I think that comes from both inside and outside the program. In fact, after spring, I think I was talking to someone in the Goog who was like, as long as we don't anoint this guy the Heisman winner before he ever takes a snap here the way we did with the last guy, I think we're going to feel pretty good. And I think there's a similar vibe around him. But I say all that to say, Hartman was a captain, a multi-year captain awake. And he's a big transfer to Notre Dame, which put its resources in the NIL and transfer department in a way it had never done before. And like, he was going part of the contract, I'm sure, was having that C on your chest once you come to Notre Dame. Yes. I don't think it's as, rigid, so to speak, with Riley Leonard, although I wouldn't be surprised if he is named a captain. Mitchell Evans again. I mean, if you're looking for someone else on offense, from the sound of it, I could see Coogan. I mean, if he's got that left guard job locked down and he's already taken reps as a backup center and he's showing that kind of versatility / leadership on the offensive line where it sounds like it's kind of lacking, at least just from a numbers and seniority perspective, that would not surprise me either.
I would actually probably go Ashton Craig among offensive linemen if they were going to go that route, but I'm not sure that they will. I think Leonard is like almost a stone cold captain at this point. Defensively, I'm just not sure what they'll do because the numbers are unique there, where it's like Mills, Cross, Kaiser, Watts, Morrison. You can't have five captains on defense. I think getting Mills, Cross, Kaiser, Watts to come back, the potential to be a captain was mentioned to at least one of them, if not all of them. So maybe that leaves Morrison out, who, you know, wasn't around there for a lot of spring prep or summer anyway with the shoulder injury. I'm not sure.
And he's a lot younger.
He's a lot younger. Not that he will be here as a senior, but that is something worth noting today. Morrison came in for the first time for interviews, said, "I'm healed 100%. I did not get to ask him the question that I wanted to, which was basically like, so the first time you're going to test the shoulder is like on August 31st, but it sure sounded that way when he talked about sort of being smart in camp, you know, following protocols. You know, he declined to explain exactly what the injury was or even kind of how it happened. So I don't have a whole lot of clarity on that after talking to him today, but certainly feels like he feels like he's ahead of schedule. He's going to play at Texas A&M. He's played all camp. But you know, you get out there, first hit's going to be the first hit. It was interesting hearing him talk about his relationship with Cam Hart, who had multiple shoulder surgeries while he was at Notre Dame, you know, and then got through a season healthy. You know, how you manage that, how you sort of protect yourself. That may be kind of an interesting storyline for Ben Morrison about like when he feels like he can go out and totally cut it loose this season, which, you know, according to him, maybe right away.
It's crazy to think of him as this veteran proven leader and probably the best player on this team if we're ranking them, you know, talent wise. And he's 3 years younger than half that starting defense.
Yep.
Just a very unique situation that Notre Dame finds itself in here. Chad Williams says captains will be announced after in-stadium scrimmage Saturday, possibly before landing though individually and announcing as a group. I got one better. They're going to save it for that Peacock show and make you pay to watch it. That's my, and we'll find out.
They won't announce captains until the 29th of August.
Well, they're making us wait 3 months after that to figure out what happens in the season. So why not keep us on our toes? And we'll find out if there are any parking tickets that keep anyone else from becoming captains, a la Ronnie Stanley, a season with Notre Dame on Showtime 2015. Michael Dallas fan in DC1 Campbell. I feel like you come into this chat at the last minute every time, and then you come in with a bunch of questions, and they're always good ones. Just try to get in here earlier next time. Sam Hartman was supposed to be coached by OC Andy Ludwig and playing his offense. Notre Dame front office failed Freeman in the 2023 offense performance. The offense was supposed to change last year. I think that's half true. He's supposed to come in and be coached by OC Tommy Reese. And when Reese left, I think everything kind of, you know, went up in the air. Obviously, the Ludwig situation was what it was. I don't think Jared Parker was the offense coordinator that Sam Hartman signed up for and was probably all that excited to play for. You know, Marcus Freeman said in so many words in the spring, right, we kind of failed Sam a little bit as far as what we put around him. I don't think he was referencing anyone individually, but yeah, by the end of last season, both personnel wise, coaching wise, that offense was not what it was supposed to be a year earlier. There was you added that yourself, Michael. All right, Notre Dame failed the Sam Hartman move. I think there's plenty of blame to go around with a lot of that. Hope Sam gets better.
It's not like her.
Right now in DC, if I'm not mistaken, they just signed Trace McSorley as a backup quarterback, but I believe he signed a contract, right? I think he signed a guaranteed deal. Like he will be on the roster.
I believe so. Or be compensated as if he was. I think the Sam Hartman experience for Notre Dame. I mean, some of the blame goes on Sam Hartman. Like he didn't play well in some big spots when they needed him to. And that's, you know, with Riley Leonard this year, he beat Clemson. I realized it was not all him. Clemson turned the ball over in some like South Florida at Notre Dame comical ways. But I think Leonard, and like that's Leonard's leadership comes up way more in conversation with people at Notre Dame, both on background and just straight up in interviews, than I really ever believe it came up with Sam Hartman. Like, I don't think Sam Hartman felt like much more of kind of a hired gun. Riley Leonard feels like he's Notre Dame's quarterback and is jacked to be Notre Dame's quarterback. So I think that matters. How much it matters, I you know, I couldn't put a statistical measurement on it, but I do think it matters a lot. And, you know, it will, I think that will show itself in some way, somehow this season.
Unless I miss them, we've not seen any Instagram videos of Riley, like, dropping off Christmas gifts to everyone in the locker room.
It's like, yes.
Maybe they're saving that for the show. I don't know.
It could be. Could be. Everyone will get Beats headphones at some point. But, yeah, I just think that Leonard just feels like so much more like one of the guys than Hartman did. I think even when you sit down and talk to Riley Leonard, like, I've got a big story that will run on The Athletic either on Friday tomorrow or Monday at the beginning of next week, where, you know, sort of detailing my trip down to Fairhope to spend time with his family, you know, at his high school, all that. He just comes across as a completely different dude than Hartman did. I think that will play well for Notre Dame. And I think that, like, Notre Dame will benefit from that.
I don't know if this is in your story or will be in your story or not. I don't know if I've said this on the show or not, but I was told at the Manning Passing Academy this year, Riley Leonard had his first ever beer. I don't know if that's good to think actually, if you're playing for the Fighting Irish, but
yeah. Some people told me that he didn't drink, and I put it in the story and then took it out based on your reference to that on a previous podcast. But I left in the never swears that from his coach, and he said, like, he, you know, he took that from Philip Rivers, you know, who they worked with when he went, brought six receivers down to Fairhope this summer to work with Rivers and just sort of like do that leadership part of it. You know, it's just much more like kind of the one of the guys stuff that not everybody has. Like, I don't think that you can fake it.
Friend of the show, Juan Jose Rodriguez asks, Notre Dame versus A&M, biggest single reason Notre Dame wins equals blank. Biggest single reason if Notre Dame comes up short equals blank. Second part first, I think offensive line is the easy answer to that. It's the biggest question and concern about this team, and particularly in relation to this game. Biggest reason they win, I think that defense is going to dominate this season. And I think that's going to be evident from the very beginning. I think we've been tracking the over-under on this game, and it's been dropping. I still don't think there are going to be a whole lot of points from both sides in this game. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think Notre Dame's going to have to rely on its defense, obviously more in this game than they will in other games throughout this season. But I expect that defense to deliver, and I think that's ultimately why they'll win this game.
I think that, like, the answer is probably the same for both the offensive line. Like, I think if they win, it's not like the offensive line will have to be great for Notre Dame to win, but it's going to have to pick up a couple third and twos. You're going to have to stop Riley Leonard from getting blown up, and then, like, maybe a ball gets deflected and picked off. Like, to me, that's my biggest concern if I have Notre Dame is, like, the freak tipped pass at the line of scrimmage, or Leonard gets hit while he's throwing it, and instead of, like, a dart post over the middle, it goes straight to a linebacker because it's like he's throwing while he's getting crushed. Like, that concerns me if I'm Notre Dame. But I think if the offensive line is good enough to avoid putting Leonard in position to make the big mistake, then I think Notre Dame will win the game. And if they can't, then I think Notre Dame's going to have a really hard time winning the game and playing in an environment that I think is going to be unlike pretty much anything anyone on this roster has played in before.
Yeah, I want to see their response because it is going to be a crazy environment. I don't know how good or bad Texas A&M is going to be, but, you know, coming, staring, like, defeat in the face at Duke and pulling it out at the last minute is different, like, than doing it at A&M. Like, it just is. I'm not saying that doesn't count for anything, but I don't know if there's...
Mike Helico present in both, but it's still...
Yeah, Riley Leonard, too, although I'll be on different sides. But, you know, I think that's something you develop over time, and you never really know how ready you are for it until you face it. And, again, I'd be shocked if this game was out of hand either way. I just don't think the way both these teams are coached and the way they're built schematically that you're going to see one team go up 14-0 or something like that early. I just don't see it happening. But again, if you find yourself in that dark place early on, if you're Notre Dame, how are you going to respond? Cause it's different. And like, there was an overrated question here. Cause of course there is, although I don't think there was related to Notre Dame or A&M. It was about Texas and I think Penn State. I'll try to find it, but whoever loses this game is going to be told how massively overrated they are. And if Notre Dame loses this game and then they run the table, everyone in SEC country is going to say, hey, wait a minute. We saw them against our seventh best team this year. How would they play in the SEC? Because you know there are going to be all sorts of versions of that argument happening all season long with a 12-team playoff.
Yeah, there's no. I think that's why this game is even more important than it is obviously critical to Notre Dame. It's that marker within the SEC. Because I don't think you can go down to A&M, play poorly, and lose. You might not be able to go to A&M, play well, and lose. And then have A&M go 4-4 in the SEC. And then that's getting held up against, like, well, how did A&M do against LSU? Or, like, how did A&M go against, you know, Texas? Because that's going to be a sort of point of comparison that Notre Dame is going to have to live with all year. So better to live with a really good one. Better to live with, like, hey, they went down there and won 31-13. That's something that would wear very well over the course of a season and make for really good content for the Peacock show as well.
And by the way, this whole thing's a TV show. I mean, I always think of 2018. Notre Dame beats Michigan. They do it with, I don't want to say without Dexter Williams and with Brandon Wimbush starting, who ended up not starting week four.
On both.
And Michigan ran the table from there until Ohio State boat raced them. And I felt like the entire season, despite Notre Dame never losing a game that year, should Michigan jump Notre Dame? What do you think, guys? And I'm thinking, well, we saw them play, and we saw them play Notre Dame arguably without their two most important offensive players, one due to suspension, one due to, you know, they just started the wrong guy, and they lost. So I think that argument was put to bed, and then Ohio State ended it for good at the end. So this is going to happen no matter what. It's going to happen to a lot of teams because of the 12-team playoff. It's part of what makes the sport so fun, so great. It's also why I already got Big Ten and SEC fatigue, because they're running this sport along with Notre Dame. The rest of us are just along for the ride. This was the question I was looking for, beef eater NDO8. Matt Pete was more of an empty statement here every year. Penn State is back or Longhorns are back. I don't know if I've ever heard the phrase Penn State is back in my life. And I'm actually, I take that back, before I got there. I got there in 07, the 05 team that won 11-1. People were saying they were back. But Texas did make the playoff last year, and that counts for something. Also, Penn State, like, none of my friends want to hear this. Michigan, Ohio State are as good as they've been. You're always going to be third best in the Big Ten. That's how you've always been, even in the glory days. Like, they're just fine. They'll benefit from a 12-team playoff by making it. Again, Franklin, a contract extension. But Texas at least made the playoff last year and could win it all this year, I think, is good enough, too. But any other good ones here? We got about 2 minutes left before we have to go out. Adam Crinity, in response to Mark Hay, Harry Hiestand didn't recruit worth a blank his last few seasons. This dude is literally the most overrated ND coach in recent memory. It's funny. I disagree. To be clear, there, like, it is funny. There's like the cult of Harry, where he's untouchable and he's the godfather. And I think I said this on the show. He was working with these guys in South Bend, even when Jeff Quinn was the offensive line coach there.
Yeah.
And that became a source of contention with some people at Notre Dame. But he does have his detractors there, particularly on the recruiting side. I think he's a really good coach. Obviously, you know, he left Notre Dame to get rid of him. But I don't think he's overrated. I don't think he's the most overrated coach Notre Dame has had. Let me put it that way.
No, I just think he's a great offensive line coach. But, you know, I think if you're overrating him, you're probably the kind of person that thinks the Joe Moore Award should be changed to the Harry Hiestand Award. Like, that's no one, but I don't know anyone who's going that far. I just think he's a very, very good offensive line coach. And I think that as a recruiter was not great. I'm not sure that I think that he was like dead weight the way that some people portray him to be, but that wouldn't say that was a real asset of his either.
Yes, I would agree with that. I would also say the Joe Moore Award, God bless Aaron Taylor, lost a little bit of credibility in my eyes when Washington won it last year. Then we saw them pretty much be the reason they lost to Michigan in the national title game, because they got dominated. Michigan's offensive line should have won it 3 years in a row. Notre Dame won it. They've won it once or twice. They won it in 17, the 33 year. And then did they win it 20?
No, they only won it one time. They were a finalist, I think, in 20. But they did not win it.
Best trophy in sports. I don't know if you've seen this thing.
Oh, yeah. No, when it was at Notre Dame, it was hanging in the Goog lobby for a long time. It's beautiful.
It's very, very cool. And I'm glad there is an award honoring it. I just hope Washington doesn't get it again this year. Time for one more before we have to head out. Let's see. Not much of a question, but we are not Marshall. Says Tosh Baker is a great depth piece. He's not a starting left tackle on top 10 team. Well, he is for the moment. You know, I think there's some truth there. And hopefully for Notre Dame's sake, it won't like have to show itself. But just what I was saying before, where you're going to need this kind of depth to show itself if you're going to make a serious playoff run. You got a guy like this, and I think you mentioned this earlier, not on this show, but you know, earlier this season on the Independent Pete, like there are people in that building who are very not forgiving, but very, very much fans of his because he did not transfer when he's had opportunities to do that. And I think those guys, whether they start or not, whether they live up to the recruiting potential or not, are often guys who, when you're playing long seasons like this, end up making a big difference in the locker room and will be ready when their number is called upon, whenever that may be.
Yeah, and that may just be Anthony Epp turns an ankle. We need somebody to go in there right now. I think that's totally different than like starting 13, 14, 15, 16 games. I think Tosh Baker will be an important part of Notre Dame's season, whether he starts, whether he plays 100 snaps, whether he plays 10 snaps. I think it will be an important part of whatever success Notre Dame has this year. Like, Notre Dame is fortunate to have him. But I do credit coaching staffs typically when they sort of try to get ahead of a curve on this. And I felt like they did that with Emil Wagner going with him, even though he'd never played over Tosh Baker initially. Maybe that same thing will be true with Anthony Knapp. I don't know. But this weekend should clear up a lot when we talk to Freeman, Denbrock, Golden, and then we'll come back with a show next week to talk about all that. But yeah, today was the last chance we'll be able to like hyperanalyze what we saw in practice, who was running with whom and why and for how much, because it's our final look at Notre Dame until, I guess, maybe until the premiere of the Peacock show, but until the season starts in College Station. So until next week, he's Matt, I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest live edition of The Independent.
Really quickly, we're hearing from a lot of you about Houston. Keep them coming. We think we might have a venue in mind, but keep recommendations coming. Also, let's move some lines, people. Notre Dame over 5.5 home wins, plus 140 on DraftKings now. I expect to see that number down once I hang up on this, because all of you guys are going to flood the betting market with Notre Dame going undefeated at home. Thanks for joining us as always. We will see you guys next week.